Atomic Power! Atomic Power! It's given by the mighty hand of God. Atomic Power! Atomic Power! Was given by the mighty hand of God.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining me now is Arjan Makajani, who is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He holds a PhD in engineering, specializing in nuclear fusion from the University of California at Berkeley. He has spent the last decades working to promote an economy based on completely renewable energy. His books include Nuclear Wastelands, Mending the Ozone Hole, and most recently, Carbon-Free and Nuclear-Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Arjan Makajani.
Thank you very much for asking me.
And as we speak, Arjan, the floodwaters in the Missouri River continue to rise around two nuclear plants in Nebraska, the Fort Calhoun and the Cooper Nuclear Station. And they say they're designed for this kind of flood, but if you see pictures of them, they're completely surrounded. I mean, it's obviously there's been some concern in France when they had a dry summer that the rivers would dry up and there wouldn't be enough water to cool them. And this is the opposite problem, flooding. But after all, the Japanese plants were flooded by a tsunami too.
Yes, I think, you know, the flooding is obviously a concern. What happened in Japan is the emergency generators were flooded out and the diesel tanks were flooded out. And so they not only lost their off-site grid power, they also lost their on-site emergency generation capability after the tsunami, not immediately, but very soon. And they had only 4 hours of battery. The four to 8 hours of battery also applies to the United States. No nuclear power plant has a long enough emergency arrangement for loss of off-site power and emergency generators. Now, at Fort Calhoun, they did shut down the power plant some days ago and have put it in safe shutdown mode. And I think they've taken some sensible precautions of presumably learned from Fukushima of bringing additional emergency generation and making arrangements for a redundant off-site power supply. But it's not a good situation to have a flood over there. You can imagine the workers are stuck there. The roads appear to be cut off. The other powers, the Cooper Station, I don't think had been shut down as of yesterday. I don't know if they've shut it down today.
Well, the others, and apart from the what happened in Japan, which is still with us, by the way, those cores that melted down are still incredibly hot. And they're still requiring more and more water, and the seawater that they circulated over the cores has been storage, and now they're adding to it thousands of gallons of fresh water every day, and they're not quite sure how to tried to extract some of the radiation, and it was too high. So again, you led to this to the conclusion that we never got a straight story throughout the entire Japanese disaster, and we still aren't getting a straight story about exactly how much radiation has been released.
I agree with you. I think TEPCO revised its estimate recently, saying that the releases had been double what they initially said during the first week. But, you know, the Austrian Meteorological Organization, using measurements from the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaties Organizations Network, their estimate for the first week of releases is double TEPCO's most recent estimate, just for the first week. And releases are continuing to the air because they've got to vent the radioactive steam from all three reactors where the fuel rods have melted through the reactor vessel. And they've now got massive amounts of extremely contaminated water that they're not able to filter, and the ocean nearby is already pretty contaminated. So I think it will be a year before we see the end of the beginning, and then it will be the middle period, and we don't know how long that will go on. There's no easy solution in sight. And when nuclear reactors were built, first of all, no one thought there'll be more than one reactor in trouble at a single site, and that accidents would go on for weeks much less months. This was never foreseen. But there it is, looking at us in the face. And, you know, we've not only had floods, we've had immense, immense tornadoes. And I do not believe the NRC is properly attending to the Category 5 tornadoes with the Mark 1 designs, whose buildings were blown up by not very large amounts of hydrogen, it would appear, about a ton.
Again, I'm speaking with Arshan Makajani, who's the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. Now, the other, I think, bombshell, if you will, in terms of nuclear power in this country is this investigative report by the Associated Press that took about a year, I believe, to put together, where the AP is reporting that the U.S. Nuclear regulators have working closely with the nuclear power industry in order to keep the nation's aging reactors operating within safety standards. What they do is they repeatedly weaken these standards in order to keep these aging reactors operating.
Yes, you know, in sports, this is known as moving the goalpost. And it's very appalling. This is really asking for trouble, especially as they are relicensing many of these very old plants for 20 years without a thorough shakedown, without shutting them down and going over every part. These reactors in question, many of them have had tritium leaks. They've got pipes buried under the reactor that are leaking. They've obviously got extensive corrosion. And we've had much more serious problems of extensive corrosion in the reactor vessel heads where the NRC has not been vigilant. We're 3/8 of an inch away from major disaster in 2002 at the Davis-Bessie plant near Toledo. And the NRC doesn't seem to have learned much from that near disaster. I think we are really asking for trouble. During the Fukushima accident, 11 days into it, the NRC relicensed the Vermont Yankee plant, which is exactly, essentially, the same design as the Fukushima Unit 1, and it did not even require dry storage of much of the spent fuel. And Vermont Yankee has more spent fuel in its one pool than all four stricken units at Fukushima put together.
And we know what happens if there's a breach of the pool and a leakage of water, that you immediately have fires, and there's far more radiation in those rods than there are in the core itself.
Yes, there's much more long-lived radiation. We didn't need Fukushima to tell us this. In 1997, Brookhaven National Lab did a study of a severe spent fuel pool accident in a densely populated area, and concluded that we could have about, in the worst case, about 140,000 excess cancer deaths, and in today's dollars, about $700 billion, with a B, in property damages and in damages. So, but the NRC basically ignored this report, saying pool storage is quite safe, acceptably safe, and moved on, and since then has ignored reports of the National Academy saying dry storage is safer, a report in a peer-reviewed journal that said dry storage is safer. And the cost of this is miserably small, yet not ordering it. Industry shall make profit before safety.
So just though to get to the basic scary facts here, you've got the U.S. has got, I think, 23 of these reactors identical to the ones that melted down in Japan.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, and that there's that they're all reaching their 40-year life cycle, but they're being relicensed to continue operating longer, even though there are leaks all over the place. And rather than force these utilities to be more vigilant and fix them, the NRC is basically deregulating its oversight.
Well, yeah, there's quite a lot of self-inspection that is allowed. So in that sense, there's a sort of de facto deregulation going on. But what is happening, I think, is worse. When you discover a problem and you have safety as your essential charter, and then you move the goalpost with a nuclear reactor that's really an appalling thing to do. You cannot sort of be fooling yourself into thinking, oh, we built lots of conservatism, so it's okay to have a little less conservatism, because after these reactors are aged, you don't know how much residual conservatism is actually left unless you do thorough inspections, and they're relicensing these things without thorough inspections.
But isn't it true that the radiation makes the metal brittle as it ages?
Well, there is neutron damage, you know, and there have been some evaluations of this, and I think some studies at least have shown that the neutron damage to the vessels is less than what had been thought 40 years ago. And I'm not saying, you know, if you're a proponent of nuclear power, I'm not saying that you should never relicense these things. I personally think that we should phase them out, and we should phase them out in due course, and we should shut down the old designs as soon as feasible for the safety of the electric grid.
Well, but the Germans have bitten that bullet. Angela Merkel, and she's a big proponent of nuclear power, she announced just recently that they're going to phase them all out. And they have more depend upon them more than we do, although they've moved much more vigorously into wind energy.
Yes.
And the Italians are also getting rid of theirs.
You know, this is something that we should be debating, but unfortunately are not. Just a couple of days after the start of Fukushima, President Obama announced that we were going to give more loan guarantees to nuclear power plants. I mean, we had not even begun to digest the scale of this disaster, which is obviously still unfolding. And I think these kinds of things are very rash and playing with public safety in a way that's really unacceptable. I can see there's a case for nuclear power as a low CO2, but you know, there are lots of other low CO2 sources that we can do, and the Germans, obviously, they are going to become the world leaders in offshore wind energy. I have no question about that. They're already pretty much there. And, you know, we're always talking about leadership, but we're not actually doing it. Nuclear power is a 20th century technology which makes plutonium just to boil water, and it's very, very expensive on top of it. And I don't see what the attraction is of a technology that makes plutonium just to boil water.
So, who was it that said it's a hell of a way to boil water?
I don't know. But I
thought it was Einstein.
Much more politely.
No, but I know. I thought it was Einstein or somebody that it was ascribed to. But again, thank you for joining us here, Arjun. And Arjun Makhachani is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He holds a PhD in engineering, specializing in nuclear fusion. From the University of California, Berkeley, he spent the last decade working to promote an economy based on completely renewable energy. His books include Nuclear Wastelands, Mending the Ozone Hole, and most recently, Carbon Free and Nuclear Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. And you have been listening to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter, and our production intern, Graham Fitzgibbon. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'm also writing a blog there. Go to ianmasters.com and click on blog. You may leave comments, and I'd love to know what you think. And I'll be back again. Bye for now. Bye.